Nurse.com is proud to be a sponsor of the Ask Nurse Alice podcast. As the premier destination for nursing knowledge and resources, Nurse.com supports your passion for healthcare with an unrivaled collection of tools, articles, and courses tailored for the nursing community. Get your daily dose of things you need to know for your nursing journey. Discover the world of nursing like never before with Nurse.com. Empower your practice, advance your career, and enrich your knowledge. Nurse.com. It's your nurse life all in one place. Hello, friends, and welcome to the Ask Nurse Alice podcast, the show where all things health and wellness take center stage. I'm your host, Alice Benjamin, clinical nurse specialist and family nurse practitioner, and I like to talk to people before they become my patients. And on today's show, we're going to take a deeper dive into a topic that touches millions of lives, yet millions remain silent as they're expected to remain graceful about Mother Nature's monthly visitor, which for some of us is more like clots, cramps, and chaos. Okay, I'm talking about the real impact of menstrual symptoms. Now, you might think it's just about having a bad period, but imagine this. Imagine not being able to get out of bed, missing work, struggling with heavy bleeding, and having severe mood changes, and feeling fatigued all the time because of your menstrual cycle. Enough suffering in silence. Today, we're going to challenge the misconception that severe menstrual symptoms are simply a part of quote unquote normal life. And instead, we're going to explore the medical conditions that can underlie these challenges and are worthy of attention along with workplace accommodations. We'll discuss severe menstrual symptoms and about the impact on the quality of life. This isn't just a personal issue, but more of a societal one, one that demands attention, understanding, and compassion. And listen, don't worry, fellas, this is helpful for you too. The better you understand the lady in your life, whether it's your mother, your wife, daughter, aunt, friend, coworker, whoever she may be, she'll appreciate you and the efforts you make to be more understanding. So whether you're suffering in silence or someone who is, or you're just interested in learning more about how can we support menstrual health in our communities and workplaces, this episode is for you. Let's start from the beginning, shall we? So let's set the scene. Whether it's Auntie Flo, your monthly visitor, your period, your cycle, whatever you'd like to label this, while many people experience mild discomfort during their menstrual cycle, for others, it can be quite debilitating. The menstrual cycle is a regulated, complex, and delicate interplay of hormones. These hormones orchestrate the cycle's various phases from the preparation of the uterine lining to its shedding during menstruation if pregnancy doesn't occur. Menstruation is influenced by a complex interplay of hormones. And while some discomfort like cramping is common, some symptoms can signal underlying conditions such as endometriosis, adenomyosis, or uterine fibroids. These can cause excruciating pain, heavy bleeding, constipation, fatigue, and so much more. And while you might not recognize it, these symptoms are actually more common than what many people think. So first, a little vocabulary, because it's important that we identify these symptoms and call them by their correct terminology. So it's understood that these are real medical terms, real medical symptoms, and real medical diagnosis, okay? Worthy of a discussion, worthy of diagnoses, worthy of treatment, and worthy of us having this conversation so we can improve upon menstrual health. Let's start. So there's menorrhagia. This refers to excessively heavy or prolonged menstrual bleeding that can be debilitating, causing severe blood loss, anemia, and fatigue. Then there's dysmenorrhea, which are painful periods. Premenstrual dysphoric disorder. This is a severe form of menstrual syndrome that can cause extreme mood shifts and physical symptoms. It can significantly impair one's daily life. Then there's menstrual migraines. So hormonal changes during the menstrual cycle can trigger migraines, which are severe headaches, often accompanied by nausea, vomiting, and sensitivity to light and sound. Menstrual migraines. These are hormonal changes during the menstrual cycle, which can trigger migraines, which are severe headaches accompanied by nausea, vomiting, and sensitivity to light and sound. Then there's iron deficiency anemia. And this happens because of the frequent or heavy periods, which can lead to a significant amount of blood loss, resulting in iron deficiency anemia. And this is characterized by fatigue, weakness, and pale skin. So for me, sometimes the best way to explain what's going on medically is to tell a story. So story time. Okay, let's take Janice, who has endometriosis. Endometriosis is a painful disorder where tissue, similar to the tissue that normally lies in the inside of the uterus, the endometrium, this tissue grows outside of the uterus. It can cause severe pain, especially during menstrual periods, and lead to infertility. This affects about 1 in 10 women of reproductive age. And yet the average time of diagnosis can be as long as 7 years. And that's because symptoms are often normalized. Getting diagnosed with endometriosis can take a long time. The main reason is that symptoms are very similar to symptoms of other conditions. And so there's a lot of reasons that can cause period pain, painful sex, and pain going to the toilet. And these all have to be ruled out before we get to the diagnosis of endometriosis. And the only way to truly diagnose endometriosis is through laparoscopy, which is a direct visualization with confirmed biopsy. Okay, so there's Janice and her whole situation with endometriosis in her presentation. Now, let's take into account Emily. Emily, whose symptoms started in her teens with extreme cramps and fatigue that made it impossible sometimes to attend school and work. It wasn't until her late 20s when she was diagnosed with adenomyosis. Adenomyosis is a gynecological condition that occurs when the lining of the uterus, called the endometrial tissue, grows into the uterine wall's muscular wall. This causes the uterus to thicken, and that can lead to heavy menstrual bleeding and pain. So in healthy women of childbearing age, the uterine lining builds up on the inside of the uterus and sheds every month during menstruation. So in this situation, it builds up and it doesn't go anywhere and it thickens the lining. Now, so that's Emily. Emily has her whole situation with adenomyosis and symptoms still similar to Janice, right? But let's take someone else. Then there's Joyce. So Joyce, who's had very heavy bleeding, pelvic pressure, and cramps for the full 5 days of her period. She didn't know, but she had uterine fibroids. She didn't know this for several years. And just so you know, uterine fibroids are cancerous growths in the uterus that often appear during childbearing years, and they can cause heavy bleeding, prolonged menstrual periods, pelvic pain, and pressure on the bladder and the bowel. And only about 1/3 of fibroids are large enough to be detected by a healthcare provider during a physical exam. So they often go undiagnosed. And the slow growth of these fibroids can actually play a role in why diagnosis is delayed as well. They can grow so slowly that symptoms may start so gradually that a woman gets used to having bad periods or a distended stomach or having to pee more frequently. This is something where it's, oh, I just must have a bad period. So women have been conditioned to normalize this, suck it up, take it to the chin, just take that L, just deal with it, for lack of better words. But here we have three different women, three different causes for their discomfort and their bleeding, but outwardly, they're having many of the same symptoms. And because it's related to their periods, because this is a taboo topic, they just deal with it. Now, three different women, three different reasons for having heavy bleeding with menstruation, all of whom thought they just had to deal with it because this was Mother Nature, and none of them knew to ask if this bleeding was heavy. They didn't know what to ask or how to compare it to, because these type of conversations aren't encouraged. Where it's something that, oh, it's your period. Hush, we don't want anybody to know. We're supposed to be discreet. Even the commercials you see on TV, very discreet exchanges with the pads and the tampons, and as if nothing ever happened. Baby, life is happening. This period is happening. These cramps are happening. This bladder pain, this back pain, it's all happening. And so, what's wrong with talking about it? I'm just saying. And if I may insert myself for a moment, although I am the healthcare provider, as a nurse practitioner, I still am a health consumer and I have a personal story. I've had fibroids. I've had fibroids removed and I've had fibroids go back. I've always had heavy periods since my early 20s. And I thought that it was something that I had to deal with. And then listen, it took more than 15 years for me to discover that I had fibroids. Ain't that something? And hindsight's always 20/20. And even as a healthcare provider, why didn't I think of that? I guess Even as a provider, you're trusting that your healthcare professional, your OBGYN person is going to talk to you about it. But it seems like the focus most of the times when it comes to your woman's reproductive health is family planning, prevention of unplanned pregnancies, your breast exams, your mammograms, and a pap smear, which obviously is screening for cervical cancer. Because the fibroids are inside and perhaps mine were large enough to be palpated, there was no indication for my provider to then take me to the next step. And when I described my bleeding, I would say, yeah, it's heavy. Then here come the questions. Was it, how many pads did you soak in an hour, 2 hours? What size are the clots? And it's very subjective, but it wasn't until my later years that I guess I met the criteria and was more vocal about it. And the reason why I found out that I had fibroids is that I was in the process of freezing my eggs. I wanted to harvest and save eggs in the event that I would remarry and decide to have children. And part of that workup process, they do all blood tests, screening scans, and blah, blah, blah. And I learned that I had fibroids. As you can see, hindsight's always 20/20. And even we as healthcare providers, I didn't even really advocate for myself. I thought that I had to deal with heavy periods and heavy clots. I just was on those always pads, number 5, overnight. I swore it felt like I needed a diaper sometime. And then I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to leave the house. On the days that I would try to work my schedule around my period, make sure that I didn't have to go anywhere. I just wanted to be home. I didn't really want to move. I just wasn't even trusting sometimes the pads because it would be so heavy. And I was afraid that I would have an accident. As a nurse, you're on your feet for 12 hours during the day, ripping, running, taking care of people, moving. And listen, I was slow as molasses on those days because I just was concerned that, oh my gosh, this feels uncomfortable. My tummy hurts. I'm cramping. My back hurts. I'm bleeding. I don't want to have an accident. When I strain, there's a gush of blood. Like, okay, sorry guys. Sounds a little gross, but it is what it is. And that's what this episode's about, right? We're unleashing the shackles of shame and tabooness and allowing us to talk about it and giving everyone else permission to talk about it by talking about my own personal experience. And not a good feeling. I didn't want to be at work. I actually didn't want to go anywhere. So it was negatively impacting my life. And because of the cramps, I would always take some type of medication. I'd try to decrease any type of external stimuli because I just wanted to relax. I just wanted a warm compress on my belly and I just wanted to lay down. That's all I wanted to do. Now, you can see by the description of that, there are some serious impacts here that we don't always acknowledge. And quite honestly, we don't want to talk about these things unless you have like your really close bestie that you could talk to, maybe that person. I'm having this conversation with you all now, but obviously I'm in a room by myself recording, talking into a camera. So pretty easy to have that conversation. I don't know how easy it is to have that conversation in a group of women unless we're all supporting one another and giving each other permission to tell our stories by sharing our stories. But these menstrual symptoms are very important to identify and very important to share with your healthcare provider because you don't have to suffer in silence. There is screening that can be done, testing that can be done to figure out what is the underlying cause of it and try to remedy or repair that as much as possible. So let's make sure we acknowledge these things because ignoring these symptoms can actually lead to some very significant consequences, not only physically, but emotionally and economically. So let's get into some other statistics here. So the prevalence of it. Okay. It's estimated that about 20 to 30% of women of reproductive age experience heavy menstrual bleeding, myself included. Iron deficiency and anemia. Now, this is something that I also have experienced. So approximately 60% of women with heavy bleeding suffer from iron deficiency anemia, a condition that can cause fatigue, weakness, and shortness of breath. Now, when I would go and get my blood work tested, they're like, gosh, Alice, you're really anemic. I'm like, am I? Really? And then once I learned I had fibroids, I'm like, huh. And this heavy bleeding, I'm like, I wonder what my lab values are like before my period and after my period. And so with the help of my healthcare provider, we did some timed blood tests. And sure enough, I was taking iron every day. And my blood levels would be just fine, iron levels just fine, right until my period. Then after my period, boom, the numbers dropped. And so even though we identified that my anemia is related to my cycle, it's not like you just take iron on the days that you have your cycle. You need to keep this built up. And it actually even resulted in me at one point needing to get an iron infusion because it was that significant. That was until I had my fibroids removed to remedy some of that. But you can see, iron deficiency anemia. You get really fatigued and really tired. You're always cold, just in case you didn't know. And Side note, fun fact, not so fun, but people who chew ice for unknown reasons tend to have, there tends to be a correlation of that in anemia. So if you see someone who just likes to chew ice, ask them, like, do you have anemia? Also, work and school absence. Studies show that women with heavy menstrual bleeding are more likely to miss school and work 1 to 2 days of absence per menstrual cycle. That makes sense. I would say for me, that's probably the first 2 days of my period because I don't want to go anywhere. Out of the 5 days, the first 2 days are like the worst. I swear, it doesn't even feel like a heavy bleed. It feels like a hemorrhage. That's what it feels like sometimes. Sorry, guys. It may sound gross, but if I have to be honest with describing what my symptoms are, if I want my healthcare provider to understand the severity and my perception of what I'm going through. Also, your quality of life. So according to a survey, about 50% of women with heavy menstrual bleeding report it significantly impacts their quality of life, impacting physical activities, emotional health, and social interactions. True statement. Now, before we dive deeper, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. Are you a healthcare professional looking to amplify your voice? Or perhaps you have a passion for media? It's time to discover MediaRx Academy, the transformative 10-week program designed to turn healthcare experts into media superstars. In just 2.5 months, you'll master on-camera communication, elevate your public speaking, confidently navigate the healthcare and media landscape, craft content that truly engages, and understand the legal and ethical nuances of medical reporting. Ready to light up the screen and make an impact? Classes start June 19th. Dive in and visit themediarx.com today to secure your spot. Don't just make a difference, broadcast it. I remember in middle school going to swim classes. We had swim classes as a part of our PE. Listen, when it was period time, I did not trust the tampon. I said, this little thing, this ain't gonna do it. And see, that's even at that early of an age, I was having challenges, embarrassment, and didn't want to talk about it. I just took the L and just took the absence or the non-participation for PE that day because I was on my period. I didn't even feel comfortable talking to my instructor about it. And also, quite honestly, there's some myths out there or the perception that, oh, it's just your period. All you got to do is this. One of the easy things you can do is this or do that. So whenever I see something that says 5 easy things you can do for your period, they make it seem like it's so easy. Baby, it is not easy. It is not easy. It's not just even the menstruation itself. It's the process. First, I'm already not feeling well because I'm having this physical thing happen to me, right? So I feel like it's taking over my body. I got to go to the bathroom every 2 to 3 hours just to check, make sure things are right. I've changed my pad. And so it's also making sure that you're able to discreetly carry your pads or your tampons with you. Heaven forbid there's enough toilet tissue that the toilet flushes and you have soap and water in there for you can wash your hands. And a trash place where you can throw away your used items without it being seen anywhere. Like that's a whole headache. Then don't be at work or at school somewhere where the bathroom is not convenient for you or you got to ask for permission. Especially if you're in a class all day, your teachers are like, why do you keep going to the bathroom? Ma'am, you should understand. But even still, it's like women sometimes don't even understand women unless we say like, I'm on my cycle. And that's literally how we do it. We whisper it because we're so shamed or embarrassed by it. There's also treatment costs. So there's an economic burden of managing heavy menstrual bleeding, which includes like the treatments of medications, surgeries sometimes, right? I mentioned that I had my fibroids removed, which is a myectomy. So I had a portion of my fibroids removed. Sometimes people have resorted to a complete hysterectomy. Many people hesitant to get their uterus removed, or maybe they're still young and they're having fibroids and they're told that they're, in order to solve all this, just get your uterus removed, but you're still wanting to bear children. I just want you to know, you don't necessarily have to have your complete uterus removed. Sometimes you can do a myomectomy where they remove the fibroids. There are also medications and cauterization and other things that they can do. So it's worth talking to your OBGYN or your fertility specialist, whoever is working with you on this, but also get a second opinion. The economic burden of managing your heavy menstrual period includes medications, surgeries, outpatient visits, and those can be substantial sometimes. And so the direct annual healthcare costs for women with heavy menstrual bleedings are significantly higher compared to those without this condition. There's also surgical interventions. Up to 20% of women with heavy menstrual bleeding eventually undergo hysterectomy as part of their treatment. Productivity loss, Women with severe menstrual periods miss up to 9 days of work annually, impacting productivity and personal growth. And that loss of productivity is estimated to cost several hundred million dollars annually in some countries. There's also psychological impact. Heavy menstrual bleeding is associated with an increased rates of anxiety and depression. Yeah, feels like it. And approximately 30% of women with this condition report psychological distress. This brings up a very important aspect of our discussion, and that's workplace accommodations and what employers understand about this. Employers should recognize that menstrual health is a legitimate medical concern. Simple accommodations like a flexible work hours or the option to work from home during severe symptoms, those can make a very substantial difference in an employee's performance and well-being. So, I talked about three ladies earlier. I'm going to take the case of Emily. Fortunately, experienced some positive changes in her work that helped her manage her symptoms. After being open with her employer about her diagnosis, her employer allowed her to work from home on days where she had severe symptoms. So it helped her to maintain productivity without her having to push through the pain, and then also without pushing her out the door of a job that she really enjoyed. And quite frankly, she needed to support herself. So that's great when you have a job that allows for work at home. But what happens if you don't have one? As a healthcare provider, as an RN in the emergency room or nurse practitioner emergency room, a little harder to plan or manage your bathroom breaks. You can, but sometimes if a patient's in need, it's hard to step away from that. So women who experience heavy menstrual bleeding and find it impacts their ability to work have several options and accommodations that can be considered to help manage their symptoms and maintain their work productivity. And in exchange, employers, particularly in environments that support employee health and well-being, may offer various accommodations under workplace policies or legal frameworks, such as the Americans with Disabilities Act in the United States. Now, let me explain. The Americans with Disabilities Act provides protections and requires employers make reasonable accommodations for employees with disabilities. So under the ADA, a disability is defined as a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. And this can include chronic health conditions, which when active, affect a person's ability to perform certain tasks. So heavy menstrual bleeding, which can be of significant pain, fatigue, and other symptoms that impacts a woman's daily activities, could potentially be considered a disability under the ADA if it substantially limits one or more of her major life activities. This means that the employer may be required to provide reasonable accommodations to a woman with severe menstrual bleeding if it is considered a disability. Now, I already know some of you are like, Nurse Alice, took this too far. Having your period is not a disability. This is something that can feel subjective, but there are definitely elements of objectivity in this because not that the employer needs to see the period, but as a healthcare provider, I can have this discussion with the patient. I can also, with our battery of, so first off, we want to assess the patient and make sure that we've identified the cause of their severe bleeding and get them treated. Now, as part of that, there's objective. They palpated the uterus to see if I can feel fibroids. Maybe there's some protrusion of the lower abdomen. I've done some musculoskeletal testing, which pain is recreated during this time of menstruation. So there are things that I, as a healthcare provider, can objectively observe. And then there are the subjective things. So the migraines, the pains, the headaches, the nausea, the sensations that the woman is feeling. And who am I to say that, no, you're not feeling that? Now, if these things collectively do impact the person's ability to focus, concentrate, affects their mobility, because when they move and they strain or lift or push or pull, there's a gush of bleeding. There's enough information there for me to say that, yes, you can intermittently deem menstruation as a disability. For example, most women are not on their periods in the entire month, but during the times of their period, that may be the time where they have some type of intermittent medical leave that covers them during that period of time. Be considered a disability. So it's important to note that whether heavy menstrual bleeding qualifies as a disability under the ADA might depend on the individual circumstance, and the interpretation may vary. Employees usually need to engage in what is known as an interactive process, and that is with their employer to determine appropriate accommodation based on their specific health needs. Just as much as the patient is going to come talk to me as a healthcare provider, explain the symptoms revolving around their period and how it impacts our quality of life, also should be having a discussion with their employer. Now, I get it. Some of y'all employers will look at you like, what? You're kidding, right? And so that's where we as healthcare providers can come in, because we can help with the documentation that is necessary to provide your employer so they can make those accommodations. But let me tell you what some of these accommodations could be, right? So it could be that you just need flexible working hours during your menstrual cycle. So adjusting work hours to start later or finish earlier can help manage your energy levels, right? Especially if you have anemia, because you might feel fatigued. And other symptoms, right? Especially on heavier days, or providing more frequent breaks. You need to go to the bathroom breaks. Also, telecommuting, working from home on days when symptoms are particularly severe, can help manage discomfort without taking a full off, right? So being in the comfort of your home in more comfortable seating and chairs, lessen. During your working, if you need to lay down horizontally, who am I? Who am I to say you can't? As long as you're getting the work done, right? There you go. Break adjustments. So additional or longer breaks might be needed to help manage the fatigue and pain, or allow for the rest or medication as needed. So you might work somewhere where the bathroom is not close by. So perhaps during your cycle time, you could be reassigned to an area that has a bathroom close by. Or if there is no bathroom at where you work, maybe there's the time off. There's something that we can think about there. Also, part-time or modified work duties. So temporarily reducing work hours or modifying job responsibilities that are physically demanding can also be helpful. For some women, when they push, pull, or exert themselves, that stress can cause increased blood outflow. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Sometimes people are like a gush, very uncomfortable feeling. Also, accessibility to restrooms. Ensuring easy access to restrooms can alleviate stress and help manage hygiene and comfort related to heavy menstrual bleeding. There might be leave policies. So utilizing sick leave or short-term disability or other leave policies designed to accommodate medical needs without penalty. You should not be penalized. I have seen commonly used is intermittent medical leave. There's also health services and support at work. Maybe you can access to on-site health services or support groups that can provide immediate relief or information for you. An ergonomic workstation, maybe comfortable seating and the option to stand or sit as needed can alleviate discomfort, because if you're having back pain, abdominal pain, you may want to be able to change your position more frequently. Also, awareness and training. Educational programs for managers and colleagues can foster a supportive work environment where women feel more comfortable seeking accommodations. And then insurance and health benefits. Ensuring that health plans cover treatments for conditions like menorrhagia, including medications, therapies, treatments, and surgeries. That's important. So these are examples of accommodations which can really improve quality of life. But what can be done for fostering an understanding of others? First, I want to say education is key, and talking about it is going to be one of the first things that we need to do. So raising awareness. Now, as healthcare professionals, I think sometimes we can overlook these things because it's not as serious relative to, right? If someone is bleeding, I'm probably more concerned about the gunshot victim bleeding versus the woman who's bleeding from her menstrual cycle. Doesn't make it right. Both lives are important. Their perception and their symptoms are both important. I guess just in the emergency mindset, the gunshot wound obviously seems more lethal, but doesn't mean that I should dismiss or not treat the woman who's bleeding, having excessive bleeding during her period. So we got to talk about, raise awareness. Let's be more sensitive and aware of what some women are going through, because listen, I don't know what these commercials are doing, but I don't see anybody skipping, dipping, and hopping in the meadows after they've changed their pad or their tampon. That's what you see on the commercials. They're dancing. They're like, hey, this is the thing. I am good. Ma'am, you are on your period and you are probably uncomfortable. Let's just be honest. And so these commercials are actually misleading, and they give the impression to other people that this is not a serious matter. And it is a serious matter. I'm not trying to be a party pooper, but dang, it's not that easy. People are like, oh, it's just your period. You'll be fine. Just take this, take a Midol or take a Motrin and just go lay down. Go eat some chocolate. And like, that's it. That's not it all the time, okay? Now, I know there's some funny memes and stories out there about how women are cranky, moody, irritable during their period. Yes, yes, because we don't feel good. But it's more than just giving me a fix of chocolate or giving me some food. It's more than that, okay? If my symptoms have caused an imbalance in me physically, mentally, emotionally, and it's something that should be taken serious and should be treated rather than just made fun of. Now, do we like sweets? Yeah, I do like some sweets and I do want to eat, but that's not going to be the end all be all, just so you know. But education is key. Healthcare providers need to talk more openly and advocate for their patients when talking about menstrual health. Also, let's stop the whispers and remove the shame. Okay. This is a natural part of life and it shouldn't be taboo. So let's stop minimizing the symptoms. No one's running around, like I said, in these meadows, hop, skipping, jumping around gleefully. No, I don't know. Maybe one person is, but majority isn't. I'll just say that because there's always one. And nothing is easy or convenient about periods. There are several products out on the market that cater to women during their menstrual cycle. They try their best to make it convenient for us and as easy for us, as less complicated for us, because this can be a messy process. This is what it is, okay? And so things that are quick, clean, and easy, discreet, we like that because we don't want to be tied up in the bathroom all day. We just don't. But let's keep back to the raising awareness. Let's keep it 100 so we can debunk these myths as I've shared with some of the things of you today. And let's reduce the stigma and normalize seeking help. Okay, so message to all my people out there who are experiencing their menstrual cycle, who are having uncomfortable symptoms. You don't have to wait to your annual well woman appointment. You don't have to wait for your physical. Shoot your provider a message through the message box. Maybe you do make an appointment because you haven't seen them for a while, but talk to them about what your cycle's doing, what it's like. There are some other things like, why is it so heavy? Okay, it shouldn't necessarily be this heavy. Maybe you do need to advocate for yourself and ask for an ultrasound, ask for some blood work. Those type of things. Ask them to do a pelvic exam to see if they can feel for any fibroids. Those are the things we have. I'm sorry, y'all. I've got to ask that because healthcare providers should be doing it, but we can't bring you, we can't drag you into the appointment. So it's a two-way street here. We got to do this together. I think today's discussion obviously is just a tip of the iceberg. What I wanted to really bring about in this conversation was bringing it to the forefront, making it okay to talk about our menstrual cycles. For some, your menstrual cycle is easy peasy, 2-3 days, light, and that's it. For some of us, including myself, it's cramps, clots, and chaos. Throw in confusion if you want to in there, or throw in a little crazy if you want to in there. It's just, it is a string of days, which is very unpleasant to me. And I understand that this is a part of the circle of life as far as women being able to get pregnant and have children. But especially during the time when you are family planning and that's not the case and you're just living life and maybe you're single and don't even have a partner and you're just living life, I don't want to suffer. I'm not going to suffer in silence for so long. I shared the story with you. It was over 20 years before I figured out why I had fibroids. That's crazy. Don't, if you're a healthcare provider and you listen to this, please don't be that person, okay? We need to be more openly and think about this. If a woman comes in and she has abdominal pain, heavy bleeding, or things like that, we should ask these things. Also, let me say this. Don't wait for someone to volunteer that information. If you have anyone who's of childbearing age, you need to ask them, when was your last menstrual period? How many days was it? And to describe their menstrual cycle, okay? And then ask them, when's the last time you had a pap smear? Have you had any other diagnostic exams? Any gynecological medical history we should know about? Endometriosis, PCOS, fibroids. We just need to ask. Sometimes people forget to mention things. It's not like, don't ask. If they don't say anything like, oh, cool, there's nothing. No, that's not the case. That's not how that works. I kind of self-talking myself here and talking to the providers, but this really is for everyone. I want everyone who's listening to this under the command of my voice to know it is okay to talk about your period, auntie flow, cycle, monthly visitor, whatever you want to call this time of the month where we are going through our menstrual cycle. That's fine. Call it whatever you want to. My goal for you is that as you're going through this, that it is something that you're able to find as much comfort in, alleviate any unnecessary symptoms or feelings. Because if you are having bleeding, migraines, back pains, bladder pains, all of those things, talk to your healthcare provider. There are things that we can do to better identify the causes, try to find some treatment options for you, and as well help you and assist you with the other aspects of your life. Maybe you need accommodations at work. Maybe your provider needs to write you a note, fill out some paperwork, whatever the case may be, but leverage your healthcare provider to get you the resources and the accommodations you need at work so you can be productive. Whether you continue to work at work or you work at home, work remote, whatever, shorter days, whatever, we want you to be able to have a fruitful life and still to remain productive and to not be hindered by the fact that you're a woman and you have to deal with a cycle. Okay? Yeah, so that was this episode. That's what that's about. So when you know more, when you know better, you do better. And I think in this, we covered some terminology. We talked about some stories about menstrual cycle and some of the discomforts, if you will, the unpleasantries of it. And I hope that helps. I hope someone was able to get some information from that that they can apply to a situation going on in their life for the better. So I'm Nurse Alice. I love talking to people before they become my patients. And I want to thank you so much for listening to the Ask Nurse Alice podcast as I talk about all things health and wellness as they take center stage. While I give you that TLC that you need to hear before the injury, before the insult, and before the trauma, and before you become my patient. So make sure to visit AskNurseAlice.com, a trusted source for health and wellness information, equipped with blogs, articles, information, tips, tools, and amazing free health library with a wide range of health and medical topics. You name it, it's there. So this wraps today's episode. I hope you found the discussion helpful. Please take a moment to support us. Hit like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you're listening. Your feedback not only supports the show, but helps me reach more listeners who can benefit from health tips like this. Don't forget to share the podcast with your friends and follow us on all social media for the latest updates. Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to our next health conversation. And until next time, make good choices, be kind to one another, and live well, my friends. Talk to you soon.